Well, the first speaker in the second half of this conference is DJ Gribbin, Division Director of Macquarie Holdings, who are, I think, the main people now involved in the private financing of tollways. I've known DJ for a couple of years, since the time that he was chief counsel in Federal Highways, and always admired the clarity in which he put his points, and he will explain to us what are the advantages of the private financing of highways, and how is it that the private sector can get more value from roads than a state highway department. So please join me in welcoming DJ.
On the box. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Gabriel, for inviting me to this great gathering. It's very, very timely. Right now, there are a whole series of projects that governors and legislators are considering across America. And one of the public policy issues that's being bantied about is, should we involve a private sector participating in this or not? And so what I'm going to do today is really focus on, we've heard a little bit about public-private partnerships, some of the value they add, the great need that's out there, the importance of connectivity. And what I'm going to do is focus really particularly on concession agreements and the value that concession agreements add. You know, there's a fair amount of opportunity out there. These are articles that were written. And note, we've talked a little bit from a financing standpoint that Greg talked about in the last panel of Indiana and Chicago deals. There's actually also a broad gap, not only how those dollars were invested, but in the politics around those deals. Chicago, $1.8 billion deal, is down here, probably the very best deal ever in Chicago's history, from the Chicago Sun-Times. Mayor Daley was a hero of the people. He had solved all these societal problems by essentially unloading a failing asset onto the private sector. Indiana was a little bit different. Beth and I were talking, her family's from Indiana. Not overwhelmingly popular in the state of Indiana, driven primarily by the public's, we talked about public ignorance before, the public's lack of understanding of the property rights the concessionaire has in the facility, and the fact that it's owned by foreigners. Interesting was the number one concern Indianans, Hoosiers, had about this transaction. Macquarie is an Australian company. Our partner Cintra is a Spanish company. So you had this Spanish-Australian. There were literally letters to the editor worried that once these foreigners took over the road, we would harbor terrorists that would then blow up the bridges. Which would be interesting because at that point they would be our bridges. They were being blown up. My point to Beth was actually if we were harboring terrorists, they'd blow up competing bridges, not our own. Is this like being taped? Yeah, now I ask myself, is this on the record? Let's go to the next slide. Public-private partnerships, when I started doing this about 10 years, I worked for Koch Industries. If I did a map of the U.S. and states that were pursuing public-private partnerships, there'd be two states really, Virginia and California. Now you can see that's filled in. The purple are the states that I speculate next year in their state legislative sessions will pass legislation allowing for these. There is a one-to-one correspondence between those states and states with existing toll facilities that are very valuable. Go to the next one. Opportunities for revenue are relatively limited. Go to the next slide. Let me talk a little bit about how concessions work, because in Indiana, there was a lot of concern about somebody, not the public, owning these facilities. And I think first and foremost, concession agreements are long-term leases. So Macquarie does not own the Indiana Turnpike. We have a long-term lease. That lease is subject to a concession agreement. That concession agreement is a 200-page document that dictates everything from what tolls we can raise all the way down to the number of hours we have to clear snow off of the main line, which is 4, and number of hours we have to clear snow off the shoulders, which is 8. So it's very prescriptive, very detailed, but it is performance oriented. So we're not told how we have to clear snow, we're just told that snow has to be off of the main lanes within 4 hours of it falling. So the public sector's role is really kind of setting the agenda. What does the public sector want? What do they want the toll rates to be? How long do they want the concession term to be? What are the maintenance requirements? What conditions does that the facility have to be returned back to the public? All of that's determined by the public sector. Our job as a bank is really to help the public sector understand the value of those different decisions. So Indiana, for example, was thinking about doing a 50-year concession. We pointed out that tax depreciation rules may or may not apply at 50, but certainly would at 75. They opted to sort of capture the value of the private sector being able to depreciate the asset and made the concession term 75 years. In addition, the concession term when saying the concession term, you want it to be long enough that the private sector views the asset as an owner and not as a renter, so that we're incentivized to treat that the same way that the public sector would. So what are some of the key things? Concession, Luke, we talked about tolling schedule. There are a number of inflators that can be used to increase tolls to keep track with inflation. The state of Indiana actually has, it's either 2% CPI or GDP per capita, whichever is greater. And that's how we value that asset. Now, Greg touched earlier on non-compete clauses, and these are relatively controversial. There was a project out in California, SR-91, one of the very first public-private partnerships in America on a highway in the modern era. And basically that agreement said that, okay, we the private sector are going to invest in new lanes, but you the public sector can't build free lanes right next to our investment. Unfortunately, or fortunately, but now you look at it, that road runs through a valley, and there really literally is nowhere, like within 40 miles either direction, to build another facility. So that was a pretty aggressive non-compete clause. What you see now is non-compete clauses that essentially say, if the public sector builds a competing facility, they can do that. They just need to reimburse the concessionaire if it wasn't foreseen in the original concession agreement. So for example, in Indiana, if the public sector builds within 10 miles of the Indiana toll road of a facility that's interstate quality that's more than 20 miles long, then they need to compensate the concessionaire. And in essence, what that is that we're going to cut a deal that's based upon our guess of what the state's going to build over the life of the concession, in this case 75 years in Indiana. If the terms of that deal are fundamentally restructured, then we ought to be compensated for that. So, but in that case, no one in Indiana in their wildest fantasies ever envisioned building something that would be a competing facility. So they're not really giving up anything. Other things are revenue sharing. The Pocahontas Parkway was mentioned earlier. That facility has a revenue sharing component because a lot of people, when they look at these deals, and I think Greg did a good point of pointing this out, there's a little bit of a misalignment of incentives if you have an executive that's in office 4, maybe 8 years, and a business deal that lasts 75, 99. And so the public's a little bit uncomfortable with that, understandably. And so some of these transactions will have revenue sharing. So if there is a massive upside in out years, the concessionaire would share that with the public sector. What to do with existing employees is a big one. In both Indiana and Chicago, all Turnpike employees were guaranteed employment afterwards with either the state, by the state or the city. And then maintenance requirements. There is a concern that I think is ill-founded that if the private sector owns this, we'll maximize profitability by letting the condition of the road run down. That doesn't make sense from a business standpoint or a customer service standpoint, but these maintenance requirements give us the legal obligation to keep them in good shape. Okay. Now, the big question is, and the Congress had a hearing on this several months ago at which I testified, and literally every member was, well, why can't the government just do what you guys do? I'm not making that up. They really asked that question. Why can't the government operate these facilities as efficiently as the private sector? And this slide is sort of designed to demonstrate the additional value. Both in the Chicago Skyway and the Indiana Toll Road, the city and the state did the right thing, which is they went out and they valued that asset. And they said, okay, well, what could we borrow against this asset? In both cases, it was roughly half of the payment they ultimately received. So in other words, that asset was twice the value, or close to twice the value of what they thought it was. Where does all that additional money come from? There's an economist, Hernando de Soto, who some of you may be familiar with, that wrote a book called The Mystery of Capital. And I think this sort of situation is somewhat analogous to that. in that, and he's talking about poverty in the third world, and he points out that there's a ton of investment that impoverished people have, but they invest in their homes. They have no clear title to that home, and so therefore it's not liquid. They can't borrow against it. It's hard to sell it, and so that capital essentially is he calls it dead capital, or it's captive capital. Similarly to a toll road, where the public sector and toll payers have a large investment in these facilities, the facility that so far have been demonstrated to be vastly more valuable than what they're getting out of it, and by just having someone else value that, you're able to release that captive capital. I mean, right now, the only people valuing the facility is the state. And I tell my friends who are heads of state DOTs, I mean, if you had a project and you bid it out and you get one bid, would you accept it? Well, no, you want multiple bids. Why? Because if you get one person who's valuing that, you're not going to get a very good deal. What concessions, in essence, allow is for multiple parties to value this asset, and not surprisingly, the asset comes out significantly more valuable. So I'm not going to run through all these different layers. We can just go to the next slide, because what I really want to focus on is kind of the financing of it and how a concessionaire from a financial engineering standpoint is able to squeeze more value out of these assets. If you look at, this is sort of a traditional tax-exempt bond financing, very simple chart. In essence, you've got that revenue line, which is your top line. You have the amount of money that you can borrow, which is the blue box. And on top of that, you have your debt coverage. So, you know, the municipal bond community is not going to allow you to borrow all the way up against your revenue line, because revenues may go down, so they want a layer of insurance that things are going to go the way that you say they're going to go. And so you have this debt coverage ratio on top of that. One thing I want you to know, the toll here, I assumed like a toll of $2, we're going to raise about $100 million under standard debt financing. Now we're going to go to, you know, the next one, Ike. This, in essence, we did on Chicago Skyway and Indiana Toll Road. Several things happened. First of all, we replaced the debt, which was tax-exempt bond debt, with bank debt. These lenders are a little bit more aggressive in their lending, and so you're able to get more borrowing from them. We replaced the debt coverage ratio with equity. And then this does a couple of things. So this is Macquarie, in this case. Money went into this road, and it helps the banks lend more to the facility. Why? Because if that revenue line dips below where we say it's going to be, who gets hurt first? We do. So they're much more comfortable borrowing or lending in this scenario. And then, not insignificantly, that dotted line is, we'll take a slightly different point of view of where revenue growth is going to go over time. And so what you have is, instead of the $100 million where it says raises in the top right-hand corner, instead of $100 million, we're raising $160, because you're capturing all of the greenish gray area that says equity, and we're capturing that gray part above there. Now, this model has been used twice for existing facilities. It's also been used, we're currently in the process of building a new facility out in San Diego. This model can also be used to lower tolls. So some of the criticism about concession models is, well, we've got these inflators and tolls are going up. Is that fair to users? So we can go to the next one. Here, similar to the first model, we need to raise $100 million. Let's assume the government needs to raise $100 million. Instead of doing a traditional tax-exempt muni bond financing, we're going to use a concession model. And instead of our toll being $2, we can now have a toll at $140. And in essence, what this does is, using a concession approach, we can take projects that are not financially viable and build them. We can raise the money that's needed to actually open the project. So we're in the process, not surprisingly, of talking to a number of states about how they can take what they thought were non-viable projects and get them built using a concession model. So finally, saying some of the concerns that there are with concession agreements, and I did kind of a David Letterman countdown. So we'll start with number 6, concessionaire will go bankrupt. Okay. This is actually the best of all worlds for a government entity. We invest a ton of money, they get all the money, we go bankrupt, they reconcession the road. This, for that reason, would never happen. Lenders would step in, they would take over. The lenders are not about to allow a revenue-generating facility go into the state's hands when it could be paying back the debt. So although I think from a kind of instinctual standpoint it makes sense to worry about the financial solvency of the concessionaire, in practice it's not really, should be a worry. Number 5, we'll sell to a sleazy operator. Okay, we like the guys from Australia. You know, they do the whole shrimp on the Barbie thing. We like their beer. All good. But what if they were to sell to somebody who, you know, really is an unsavory character that we don't trust? And there, all these concession agreements, the government entity has to approve any transaction that involves shifting the rights, property rights of this to somebody else. State will lose toll revenue needed for maintenance and repairs. This came up in Indiana, actually. People were quite worried about, okay, we've got the Indiana Toll Road. If we give all the toll road money to the concessionaire, what will we use to repair the facility? Completely missing the point that the concessionaire is responsible for maintaining the facility. To the point of not only maintaining it, but we have to expand it over the course of time. If there's congestion, we have to make a whole series of improvements. In effect, in the next 4 years, we'll spend about $300 million under the concession, and over the course of the concession, spend close to $3 billion improving the facility. We will fail to repair the facility. I kind of touched on this before. Again, the concession agreement doesn't allow us to do that. Now, any agreement is only as good as its enforcement, right? So, okay, we've got this great contract, but what happens if we don't obey it? Essentially, we have a period to cure, and then after that, we lose our $3.8 billion payment. So that's a pretty good incentive to keep us in line. And then we'll raise tolls to the roof. Legitimate concern, concession agreement governs how we can raise tolls, and so again, the public sector decides that. The final number one concern, government will squander the concession payment, and I think Greg touched on that. Not really much we can do about that, but I think it's a legitimate concern. So with that, I'll wrap up, pass on to my panelists, but thank you again, Gabriel, for having me.